And Nagon himself did not advocate the study of philosophy for the masses, but as an intellectual pursuit, it was not popular, but it was quite common in that time and in that place in the world. Nagon's interest in all of the sciences was based upon his hope for knowledge of the Torah. He said, if one does not know mathematics, if one does not know astronomy, if one does not know science, then one cannot appreciate the Torah. Then there are many subjects in the Torah which are sealed and closed from us. You'll see the Gaon's commentary to the laws regarding the Jewish calendar and regarding the new moon. You will see his approach to it as mathematical, with astronomy, with knowledge, with calculations. And the Gaon in the 18th century was a very modern man, if we could use that term in a very positive sense. He was a person that was well grounded in all fields of knowledge in the world. The Gaon also was the greatest Kabbalist of his time, even though he spoke out very strongly against the study of Kabbalah, and one of his main objections to Hasidus was its almost complete reliance on Kabbalistic ideas. But that's part of the paradox of the Gaon. The Gaon was not going to be destroyed, but rather he would be enhanced by the study of philosophy and by the study of Kabbalah. But the masses would be destroyed by the study of Kabbalah. And therefore he spoke out against it, even though he was one of the great Kabbalists. And during the same time, that was true of Rabbi Yaakov of Emden also, who was also a great Kabbalist and who spoke out very strongly against the study of Kabbalah amongst Jews. The Gaon entered into the fray against the Hasidim not on the basis of first-hand observation, but on the basis of evidence that was brought to him by others. And the Gaon's main concern was that Hasidus would degenerate into a cult, into a sect, into extremism, into magic and mumbo-jumbo, into miracle workers, and all sorts of beliefs that really were contrary to Judaism. He was also afraid that it would lead to further ideas of false messiahs, of all sorts of supernatural events, and therefore he did all in his power to prevent that from happening. And all in his power to prevent that from happening included his signing on a ban of excommunication against the Hasidim. The Gaon was not a man who could be ignored. And the Hasidim saw in him their major opponent, their major problem. And as long as the Gaon lived, the Hasidim were under the gun, so to speak. The Hasidim were constantly forced to defend themselves, to explain themselves, to prove themselves. After the death of the Gaon, that situation changed. As I mentioned to you, Hasidus became the establishment. And the Misnagdim were the minority. And really, after the death of the Gaon, within 35 years after the death of the Gaon, the entire bitter dispute had become diffused. It no longer was waged with the intensity that it had been. That simply was because the Gaon was no longer present. He wasn't there anymore. He was gone. The Gaon is also seen as being at least the spiritual head, the spiritual father of the Musar movement. I hope to discuss with you in a few weeks the Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Musar movement, which was one of the main great philosophical and social trends.